is a matter that a request which was made to the Speaker by the Democratic Alliance for tabling the trial of request for the institution of removal proceedings against the public protector. The motivation is that typed in the letter signed by the Chief Whip of the Democratic Alliance. We insisted that the matter be raised here, mindful of the fact that we wouldn't have enough time to entertain it fully, because the members of the Democratic Alliance are not available for the rest of the week. And we have, I want to say something before we even take the matter forward. As the chair of the committee, we looked at our program of the year and found that we have many legislation that we have to finalize before the end of the year, and that much as we would have wanted to deal with the matter as this committee, it would not be possible for us to do justice to the matter that has been referred to us. And also wondering whether we are really the competent committee to deal with the matter. And secondly, whether we even have the capacity as this committee to deal with the matter, and whether the matter should not be, whether we, this committee, should not request the Speaker to set up an ad hoc committee to deal with the matter, unless we want to try to do the impossible. But because I'm not the committee, I'm only the chair of the committee, I decided that I'll table this matter for your consideration, with the request that this matter, that we request the Speaker to look at establishing an ad hoc committee to deal with the matter. On two grounds. Firstly, that our program is full. We have to finalize legislation this year. And also that I don't think we have the capacity as this committee to deal with the complex matters that would arise in this matter. There are two matters in one. The other one is related to the conduct of the deputy of the public protector. So from me, that's how I would approach the matter. Honorable members, I guess you have read the referral and the motivation, and then I will open the floor to you to deal with it. Honorable Hon, you want the privilege to speak first on the matter.
Chair, well, no, it is indeed my party who made the request, but I'm not the scribe or the owner of the request. I think I'm here in my capacity as a member of the committee, but if you want me to speak first, I'll do so. Yes, Chair, well, I think from our point of view, I think we agree with you that we don't necessarily have clarity in our own minds whether this is the competent committee to deal with the matter. The relevant legislation talks about a committee of the National Assembly, and I think there is a case to be made out that if the public protector is to be selected by an ad hoc committee, then quite possibly it must follow that in dealing with an allegation of misconduct or incapacity or otherwise reasons to remove the public protector from office, then it must follow that it must also be an ad hoc committee. So that's an argument that I think Parliament at least must get proper advice on before continuing with the process, in our view. If the decision is that it is to be this portfolio committee, I'm not quite sure what you mean with we don't have the capacity, whether you only refer to time constraints and whether that's also a reflection on the intellectual and other capacity of the members of this committee. I would hope you refer only to time constraints. And then lastly, if I must comment on the issue of the programming of this committee, if it is to be this portfolio committee, I would like to argue that I don't think it will be prudent of Parliament to say that we park a request of this nature due to our burdens in terms of legislation. If it is the view of Parliament that there is a case to be answered or to be investigated, I think it will put our constitutional order at risk if we to say that due to our own programming ideas of programming and urgency that we cannot deal with this on an urgent matter. But that of course ties in with your argument that quite possibly the best vehicle to deal with this will be an ad hoc committee. Thank you.
Thank you for a very good legal advice. I refer to time constraints, not intellectual incapacity of the committee. Honorable Bongo, Honorable Majaki, Honorable Mwan.
Thank you, Chairperson. This is a serious matter when a matter refers to interest in removing the public protector. We just received the documents now, and I think we need to have time to look at them. And I'm talking on behalf of the ANC, to say ANC members need to be given an opportunity to look at the matter as tabled by the DA. And at the same time to say that cognizance also needs to be taken by the fact that it's the same parliament that appointed the public protector less than a year ago. Indeed, you are correct when you're actually also asking, are we the right structure? But let's go and have a look at the documentation in order for us to be in the position to manage to effectively respond to the contents as written by the DA.
I'm not inclined to say the ANC is going to look at the matter. I think I table this matter to this committee to make a resolution now so that we can go to the speaker with the resolution of this committee. And I think the TA has already been helped in their attitude towards the matter. Honorable Bongo.
Yeah, thank you very much, sir. I think I agree with the Honorable Majaki. Maybe we may have to look at it that way, but because I see the document is written by Steenhuisen, the public protector opened a case against Steenhuisen for leaking the information in that and is the author of this report. So we may need to just investigate, but we cannot be kowtowed by the DA.
I don't even think this matter is even relevant for any consideration by the committee, because if we were to say, look at the reasons that I see here, they are just neither here nor there. It does not arise. They just want to kowtow us as parliament, and they want us to sing to their song. When we appointed the public protector, the DA stood there. They said they don't want that public protector. So this is a ploy to pursue what they started when we're employing the public protector. I just don't think we need to waste Parliament's time by putting in ad hoc committee. I just want the committee must write to the Speaker. Say to the Speaker, the issues that are here are neither here nor there. They are neither coming nor going. There's no basis whatsoever. All we can do is to give the Office of the Public Protector capacity to execute its mandate properly. Thank you, Chair.
Those that speak after will bear in mind the recommendation that I made, that we don't go into the merits of the referral. The question is whether, given our load of work, we'd be able to deal with this matter, and if not, whether we should not refer the matter back to the Speaker with the request that they deal with it as they saw it, see it fit. Honourable Majaki.
Thank you, Chairperson. Again, I think I just want to reiterate the fact that we want to have enough time to look at the matter. And maybe when we come back here, we will actually endorse what is being said, that maybe the matter can be referred back to the Speaker.
I've ruled on that matter because I don't think we must put that matter again on the agenda of this committee unless the committee sees otherwise. We have lots of work to finalize. Honourable Tumulan.
Honourable Chair, you may have looked at this thing before. I don't think it is fair that you give us the document now and you say you must take a decision now about it. We need to put our minds in. It's a very, very important thing. When you talk about the public protector, it talks about somebody who is very, very important in this country. Now you are saying, let's take a decision to take this thing out. We need to put our minds in it and decide. I don't think it's fair that you introducing this thing in the committee and you say, there and then, throw it out from this committee, throw it out back to have an ad hoc committee. You have taken the decision, you know about it, you knew about it. I think it's unfair. I think Mama Jacques' proposal is correct. Let us have time. We come in before this committee, it will be a short time. We would have considered all these things, we would have read this thing and taken an informed decision. And then we say, I mean, it don't take even 5 or 10 minutes to do so. But it's unfair to give us this thing now and say, consider, take a decision. It must be a decision of the committee. This is why I'm saying, please, give us time.
Honourable Short. Chair, your suggestion is a suggestion on principle, and that is the ad hoc committee appointed the public protector, therefore an ad hoc committee should consider this matter, and therefore I support you in the regard that we've got more than enough work. The issue is, as well, that the members are saying that you've come predisposed. Well, other members are saying it's neither here nor there. They're already debating the merits of it here. I'm not going to debate the merits or refer to the judgments that have made findings against the public protector already. I think, Chair, maybe a way forward might be just to stand it down until later this afternoon for members just to look at that. I think your suggestion is not deciding on the merits either way, but it is the appropriate forum to decide this, and I would suggest and support you that an ad hoc committee would be the appropriate forum, given our workload and given the fact that the public protector was appointed by an ad hoc committee. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Schwartz.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, Chair, I mean, obviously, as the Honourable Swart says, if we are to debate the merits or demerits of the request, that's an whole other issue. I understood you specifically directing us that we are to decide on the process. What I, however, must add is that I think the statement by the Honourable Bongo that this complaint is motivated by a complaint of the criminal complaint of the public protector against the chief whip, that's factually incorrect. The criminal complaint is not against the chief whip, but in fact against the deputy chief whip of the Democratic Alliance. I think it's not proper for him to impugn on the dignity of a fellow member of parliament, and that he should be directed to withdraw that. Lastly, I want to say that it's quite ironic that members now say that they're not ready to decide on the process based on the fact that we received a handout during this meeting. The fact of the matter is that this was tabled and circulated to us all by way of email Thursday last week already. So even if the ANC as a collective wanted to take a decision, they were placed in a position to do so, and I don't think it's fair of them to try and play delay tactics just in making a decision on the process going forward. Thank you.
I think with due respect, Chair, may I request that the ANC has a caucus on this matter now, before we get to this.
Honourable
No, thanks very much. You see, this matter is tabled by the DA, but the matter, it originates from the DA, and they have applied their mind to this matter. I don't know which session they held, but I also consider what you are saying, Chair, in the question of time. And I would concur with Honourable Mbumla that we have a break, discuss the matter, come back to committee and make a decision.
Thank you. Honourable Mbumla.
I'm sorry, Matthew.
I was saying, just grant the ANC
a 5 minute break and reconvene thereafter. And consider your proposal, Chair.
I think the ANC
is entitled to have a caucus, but let me just
put it on record that I have no right to decide for the Speaker. The Speaker referred the matter to us. I am simply saying
we, as this committee, would not have time to deal with this matter this year, and then the public protector was appointed by the ad hoc committee. One of recommendation that one could make to the speakers that an ad hoc committee be put together to deal with the matter, but it is really the speaker that is competent to decide on how to deal with the matter. But now let's allow the ANC to have a caucus, and then we take the matter further from there. You have 5 minutes to, so which means that we must also agree that we forfeit lunch, because at 2 o'clock we have another meeting. We don't want to disrupt the work of Parliament. Can we give you the ANC 5 minutes to caucus?
Sorry, Chair, should we just
adjourn till 2 o'clock? Then we start again at 2 o'clock.
O'clock.
Oh, the matter.
Bring another committee here, and where they have spent money to come here, and then we give them 30 minutes because we are having caucus. Will the ANC have 5 minutes?
We support the idea that we will, just before we start, after lunch, present the position. Thanks.
No.
I'm saying at 2 o'clock. When we start with a briefing. Now, if we have to use time let's use our own time, not the time of Parliament. Can we allow the ANC to have a caucus now before we go for lunch? I've just conferred with the leader of the delegation that we'll have to deal with another matter before we proceed. And before we do so, I just want to refresh the members' memory of what I said. And before I give the members an opportunity to deal with this matter. Firstly, allow me to put on record that the office of the Speaker timeously circulated the referral of the matter of the DA to our members Thursday last week, and therefore that we are entitled to assume that all members have been aware that of this matter. Secondly, that my proposal is informed by practice. This is a justice committee, and as a justice committee, we use precedents. When the matter of Pikoli was dealt with, it was an ad hoc committee that dealt with the matter. And when the public protector was appointed, it was the ad hoc committee that dealt with the matter. And the second ground I advanced for my proposal was that our load of work, the legislation that we have to finalize this year, is such that we wouldn't have the capacity to do justice to the matter referred to us by the Speaker, and that therefore I'm proposing this committee that we refer the matter back to the Speaker on those grounds. So my proposal was perfectly in order and based on precedent. But I said, even when I was approached by the media, that I'm not the committee. I cannot take a decision. The committee will take the decision. And that what I'll do will table the matter to this committee with this proposal. And then I repeat what the proposal was. The proposal was that this committee wouldn't have the time because of the legislation already before it, which must be finalized this year, to deal with the matter referred to us by the Speaker. Secondly, that this committee should consider making a recommendation to the Speaker that an ad hoc committee be appointed to deal with the matter. But the suggestion that the members did not have time to look at the referral, and that the referral came to their attention in this meeting, is incorrect. The correct thing is that the Speaker circulated the matter timeously. So there are those who wanted to time 5 minutes to consider their position, and that was duly granted. So I will then open the matter for those who still want a second bite on the matter. Honorable Mpumulwa.
For the record,
the information was circulated on the 28th by the Speaker, emailed to all of us. So the Speaker did her work and timeously.
Thank you, Chairperson, and would like to thank you for giving us the opportunity of applying our minds to the matter as tabled today on two matters that come from the Office of the Public Protector. Number one being the request for the institution of removal proceedings against the Public Protector. Number two, a request for an inquiry into conduct of Advocate Malunga for unlawfully terminating an investigation into 10 million and 7.2 billion and 117 billion of fraud and irregular expenditure by the former executive mayor and municipal manager of the Grueleni municipality, which was reported to the Public Protector by the complainant and MP Waters of the DA in a meeting held with her on the 26th of June 2017. The ANC study group has actually met to try and apply its mind to documents as presented in this committee. We had to actually go in and apply our minds to the documents because all the study group members have actually indicated that they have not seen the documents prior to this meeting. Upon our engagement, the study group expressed the fact that, you know, the Office of the Public Protector is a very important office in the country. And whatever comes out of that office is something that actually guides the country in terms of realization of constitutional democracy. And when there is a matter that requires attention in the Office of the Public Protector, it actually makes it urgent for us as a country, for us as Parliament, to respond accordingly and timely. The members, therefore, Chairperson, have decided that the committee should rather look at the matter as tabled today instead of actually maybe taking into consideration issues of capacity. We do believe that whenever there is a problem, it means that the committee needs to actually meet maybe on additional days like Fridays and Saturdays so that we can be in the position to look at the two matters that are of importance timely, and so that they can be concluded also to allow the Office of the Public Protector to continue to focus on its mandate. I thank you.
Any other honorable, Honorable Kumura and Honorable Bongo?
Yes, I.
And then Honorable Matenda.
I want to concur with what the Honorable Manjaki is saying. And I think that the question of capacity, as was explained, is not that we don't have the intellectual capacity to deal with the matter. I think, as the Chairperson has said, now it's a question of time. I will request, and please respectfully, that we meet at other times, even if it's a Friday. But let us handle. I think the Speaker was wise to send this thing to us. This is part of our work. Can we do it, say, on a Friday? Or even Saturday? Or even Thursday? Or at any other time? Give ourselves time, or in the evenings. Let's give ourselves time, look into the matter, and take a decision, and give it to the Speaker. Thank you very much.
Chair, I second Dr. Majake and Advocate Mpumulwana. Thank you.
Well, Chair, I want to confirm two things, that indeed we received the email from the Office of the Speaker well in time, and we should have applied our minds on the content of the correspondence. And there's no excuse whatsoever that the documents were only circulated now. Secondly, we should be hesitant to deal with the merits and demerits of the matter, because we are looking at appropriate platforms, an appropriate mechanism to deal with this matter. For that, I would want to put it on record that I agree with your summary of the course of action which should be followed. And those who cannot be warned by reason at this point in time shall be converted by time. Thank you so much. Thanks very much, Chair. I want to second what was said by my colleagues from the ANC study group. This matter here deals with misconduct, incapacity or incompetence. And we believe this committee is the one that plays oversight on the work of the public protector and therefore is better positioned to deal with those issues. The public protector might have been appointed by an ad hoc committee, but an ad hoc committee does not play oversight on what on the work of the public protector. Therefore, we say this committee is better positioned and it will be able to deal with this thing. If it's a matter of time, we'll create time and deal with the issue. Thanks very much.
Chair, I still believe that your course of action that an ad hoc committee should deal with this is the better. Let us also remember that the basis of the complaint relates to a judgment. The judgment was indicating that you as chairman, the speaker and chairman, had to amend the constitution. So you are indirectly implicated, and this committee, we were instructed to amend the constitution in a certain manner. We now have to sit as judges in our own matter. So that complicates it further. And that is why I believe MPs on an ad hoc committee that were not implicated in that judgment, that were not instructed to amend the constitution, would have been the better course. Thank you, Chair.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Well, firstly, I think we're at least making headway, but I would urge us to rather be cautious in deciding whether we take ownership of this as a committee ourselves. I think apart from the argument made out by the Honourable Swart, I think your guidance in terms of the president of ad hoc committees dealing with similar investigations is also valid. I would think that for now, we're obviously not going to deal with it today. Can't we go for a situation that we that the matter remain on our agenda, but then when we next meet on the issue, we receive advice from Parliament's legal advisers as to whether this committee is the proper forum to deal with this investigation. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. You know, when you make an introduction, you started off very well that the speaker made a referral, and speaker is acting on legal advice. So whenever speaker takes certain decisions, she also relies on advices from the parliament. I don't think we need to belabor this matter beyond now. And I should say that I did not receive the documents. Maybe Mr. Horn emailed them to me, but I did not receive those documents. The matter before us was referred to by the speaker, and we are just requesting to deal with the matter and create much more time, since Fridays are days that are vacant for most members. If Friday is not suitable, we can take Saturday or Sunday or even Monday, because this is a matter of serious national importance. We've got to apply our minds and we've got to deal with it swiftly, Chair. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I would like to align myself with sentiments echoed by my colleagues here, Honorable Dr. Majake, Bongo, Mpumlwana, and Maila, that we are the relevant committee to deal with this matter, as we are playing oversight over the institution of public protect. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. We do not really want to belabor the matter further. Based on need for legal advice, as if the office of the Speaker was ill-advised when it made referral to this committee. I just want to emphasize the fact that it is important for us to just continue as advised by the office of the Speaker. And in terms of the committee being implicated, I think the recommendation of the public protector was actually referring to Parliament having to make an amendment, not the committee. So all of us as Parliament, including members of Parliament who are not in this room, are all implicated. I therefore continue to recommend that let the committee look into the matter as tabled from the DA.
Let me say what I'm going to say as the chairperson of this committee, not as the chair of any particular party, to say that the Speaker has the right to refer matters to us and to do so timeously, and the Speaker has referred the matter timeously to us on the 28th September this year. And if there are members who were not able to see the referral on time, that cannot be the problem of the Speaker. Because as other members are saying, they are prepared to work even on Fridays, Saturdays and Sundays, so the onus is on them to have used the past Friday, Saturday and Sunday to study the referral by the Speaker. And also the recommendation which I made here was made on the basis that the issue before the committee related to the mechanism of appropriate forum to deal with the matter, and secondly, the capacity in terms of time frames of this committee to deal with the matter. But also the third issue, which is a very important issue, is the issue of the Speaker and myself being respondent in the matters involving the public protector. So I would say the committee may, if it thinks it is the competent forum, but I may not be the competent person because I cannot be a judge in my own cause, which means I would have to consider whether I should not recuse myself. So I then would rule that this matter stand down until I consult with the Speaker. So we are not going to take a decision on this matter now.
No, Chair. No.
Can we put? I'm not going to allow anybody to speak. I'll put the matter to a vote. Those who say that, in the light of the reasons given, they insist that the committee must deal with the matter, must they are entitled to vote in favor of this committee dealing with the matter. But to summarize, I'm saying the issue was whether or not we are an appropriate forum to deal with this matter, or whether we should ask the Speaker to reconsider the referral of the matter to ourselves. As far as I'm personally involved, I feel conflicted because I am a respondent in the matters that involved the involves the public protector. So I wouldn't want to preside over a matter where I'm conflicted. And also, lastly, it is the committee, as I said to the media before, that are not the committee. The committee is entitled to take a decision. So may I put the matter to a vote?
Those who say that the kind of honorable material.
I think you have made a ruling.
No.
So
I tabled the matter with recommendation.
Based on the law and precedent, and there are those who say, regardless of the precedent and the law, they feel that we are a competent forum to deal with the matter. So I say on that basis, let's put the matter to the vote. Those who want...
I think what is just being said about precedent and the law need to be excluded from what you're just about to vote for. I just want to move that we vote and I second to the motion that we vote. But just to indicate that we are not actually saying that there is any precedent or the law that is actually... Can I finish talking?
Proceed on the vote. I wanted to speak and the old ANC screamed at me because they said, this is not time for dialogue. It's time to vote. And why is she entertaining a dialogue?
I will stop voting. I will stop talking so that you can vote. Thank you.
The point of order is that Honorable Majake is out of order. She's out of order because she, together with ANC people, screamed at me. And they called for voting and nothing else but voting. Let's entertain voting.
We agree that we
I sustain the point of order. Those who say we are the appropriate forum to deal with the matter referred to us by the speaker and that we have enough time because we can even use Fridays, Saturdays and Sundays to deal with this matter and that therefore the fact that our load of work would not allow us to dispose of this matter in this year, let them raise their hands. Raise your hands again. That's Honorable Majake, Honorable Mutapo, Honorable Maila, Honorable Bongo, Honorable Mpumulwang are saying what I just summarized. Those who say that we should refer the matter back to the speaker to deal with the question whether or not we are an appropriate forum to deal with the matter, especially in the light of the fact that the chairperson of the committee may even be conflicted, and if that is a correct interpretation, that before the committee deals with the matter, the chair must recuse himself because the chair cannot be a judge in his own cause. And also that if we deal with this matter, we will not do justice to it because our program is loaded already.
Can I take those who honorable Bon, honorable Swart, honorable Matthias? So you have been defeated by the majority.
First party, next time.
Yeah, you have been defeated by the majority. So I'm no longer going to allow
further discussion of the matter because we have the Office of the Chief Justice that has been waiting for us to deal with matters that were not on the agenda for this time. So I'm going to allow the office of the Chief Justice to proceed to with a briefing.
No,
I am informed that Honorable Maila and Honorable Mpumulwana are going to international relations, and they are duly excused to go to that meeting.
Thank you, Honorable.
Can I just note that there are two members who have left this meeting without my permission, and that therefore the meeting does not correct. That is Honorable Majake, Honorable Mutapo, and then we don't have a quorum. They walked out. I don't know why. I'll ask the committee secretary to...
Should we adjourn for 5 minutes?
Can we just wait for 2 minutes? The committee will check if they're coming back. Because we don't have to vote. Proceed.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. We are called to present the Office of the Chief Justice National Department annual report for the financial year 2016-17. The presentation outline is we will cover the purpose, the organizational overview, the program performance according to Program 1 on Administration, 2 on Judicial Support and Co-Administration, Program 3 Judicial Education and Research. We will cover a summary of the financial performance of the department, then the Auditor General's audit scope, its findings, and the status of the drivers of internal controls, the OCG risk emanating from the Auditor General's audit, improvement plan, and the activity plan to conclude the annual report process at the conclusion. The purpose is to provide an overview of the OCJ's 16-17 annual report, highlight the achievements in terms of the performance of the department, as well as highlight the challenges in relation to that performance. Organizational overview, we are reporting as the OCJ that we have achieved in the second year of the department, 2016-17, an unqualified audit opinion. Performance of the department has improved during the year under review, 16-17, compared to the previous year, which was the maiden year, 15-16. In the year 16-17, we had 20 planned targets, indicators and targets, 17 of which were achieved, which translated to 85% performance for the financial year under review.
Let me just correct something. Mr. Bongo went to the Committee on Defense to help them correct and come back. Mrs. Majake had gone to the ladies, presumably, and she's back. So we are quite in order. Proceed. Mrs. Mutapo, where is she?
She's actually going to one of the committees, and we should be coming back.
Yeah, I think in future, as the whip of the ANC, people must leave with permission of the chair. Because if people are just walking out, the impression may be created that people are walking out of the meeting. And this is no longer the meeting of the ANC, it's the meeting of the Committee of Parliament.
No, I've noted the chair. I think probably maybe it was preceded by a very difficult session. That's why you misinterpreted what was going on.
I accept your explanation. Thank you. Proceed.
Thank you, Chairperson and Honourable Members. I was on the third bullet that the 16-17 financial year performance, we had 20 targets and we achieved 17 thereof, translating to 85% performance. And compared to the previous year, 2015-16, our maiden year for the vote, we have 35 indicators and 26 were achieved, translating to 74%. Therefore, the department's performance has improved from 74% to 85%. The slide with the figures is an expression of the graphic expression of the performance. The first green and the second red represents first the 74% for the last year, the maiden year, and the second 26% is the non-achievement. The third green slide, 85%, as I've already indicated, is the performance of the current year under the year under review, which is 16-17, with 15% under. Highlights of the key achievements for the current, for the year under review, which is 16-17, just a few highlights. The 90.2% of the plan, 90% of the funded vacant posts were filled. We obtained an unqualified audit, as our outcome is already indicated. 91% of planned 80% audit findings, both internal audit and auditor general's findings, were addressed. 86% of the planned 65% compliance with quasi-judicial targets were achieved. 85% of the planned 65% of default judgments were also achieved, also finalized by the registrars in the courts. 87% of the planned 65% taxation of legal costs were also finalized, and 90 judicial courses were conducted, exceeding the target by 20. So these are the highlights of us having exceeded the targets that we had sent for ourselves. Going to the program performance in terms of each program, Program 1. Program 1 administration had a total of 10 targets, of which 8 were achieved, translating to 80%. This program has got 4 sub-programs. The first sub-program, management, achieved all its targets. Corporate services achieved 50%, 1 out of 2. Sub-program, finance, administration, achieved all 3 of its targets with 100%. Internal audit and risk management services achieved 75%, 3 or 4 of its target. Next is the first sub-program, management. The first indicator relates to planning. As the honorable members would know, this is a new department, so we are improving in our planning processes. So the department did achieve the timelines and the submission timelines relating to the submission of the annual performance plan. The second sub-program, corporate services, the first indicator relating to funded vacancies being filled, 90% thereof, as you would know, in the DPSA compliance, but at any given time, 90% of all your funded posts must be filled. We have achieved 90.2%, and due to our constant follow-up on processes with advertising and filling of posts and ensuring that we keep management accountable for the time frames. The third, ICT master system plan, developed and implemented over the MTEF. We implemented the MSP from 2016-17. The target of the first 15-16 was the system plan developed, and for the annual 16-17 was the implementation initiated, as already alluded to. The actual achievement is that the ICT MSP was partially initiated. In other words, the infrastructure project was completed, and the second, the e-filing system was also initiated. The deviation is that the service provider for the e-filing project was not appointed because of the financial constraints that the department was experiencing. So we managed to achieve the ICT infrastructure project and complete it. Initiated the e-filing, but we are moving to phase 2 now because we could not fill it in the first. The fourth indicator was unqualified audit outcome, which indicator and target we have achieved. The fifth, the number of financial performance reports submitted within the prescribed timelines. This refers to Section 38 reports that we have to submit to Treasury. All were done and submitted on time. The number of the sixth indicator, the number of asset register produced in line with the prescripts. Biannually, we have to ensure that the registers are in place, and that was done, the asset register. The combined assurance plan developed and implemented. This is the seventh indicator. That was also achieved. The assurance plan was developed and piloted in five courts under the supervision also of the Audit and Risk Committee. Number eight, number of strategic operational risk, operational and strategic risk developed and updated. We did all of them, all eight of them, and that was achieved. Number nine, percentage of audit findings, both internal audit and auditor general's addressed. Our target was 80%. We achieved 91%. 115 of 126 of our audit findings were dealt with. Due to concerted efforts that the department has put in place, as we also have a process, internal process to facilitate audit issues. Internal sub-program internal audit and risk, the percentage of reported fraud cases investigated against the target of 100%, we achieved 87%, 26 out of 34 were outstanding at the close of the financial year, which is a 13% deviation. The forensic unit capacity had its constraints as a reason for the deviation, and availability of witnesses and suspects continues to be a challenge. And we closed the year with four cases outstanding. Program 2, Judicial Support and Court Administration. Program 2, Judicial Support and Court Administration. The program had a total of seven indicators, six achieved in translation to 86%. The sub-programs, first administration of superior courts, 82% achieved, 5 out of 6 targets. The JSC achieved 100%, all of its targets. The sub-program of administration, the first percentage of compliance with quasi-judicial targets, 65%, was an annual target. We have achieved 86%, and the numbers are indicated, 67,662 of the 78,898 cases were dealt with, which is an overperformance by 21%, because we did improve our controls in that environment. The second, the number of superior court performance monitoring reports also achieved, all the five reports. As an annual target, we achieved. The percentage of default judgments finalized by the registrars in the courts against a target of 65%, we achieved 85%. 49,252 of 57,656 were dealt with, which is an overachievement of 20%, also because of the improved control environment relating to this area. Percentage of taxations of legal costs finalized by the registrars in the taxing masters in the courts against a target of 65%, we achieved 87%. 19,510 cases of 22,414 were dealt with, an overachievement of 22%, also because of our improved controls in this area. Fifth target, training workshops on case management conducted for registrars, statisticians and clerks. These are the officials or the capacity that supports the judicial function. All of them were conducted as planned. The sixth indicator and target, warrant of release delivered within 1 day of the release granted against a target of 100%, because every warrant must be immediately issued and executed. 88% was our achievement. We did not achieve the target. 79 out of 90 were dealt with, under performance of 12%, due to delay of the files being transferred from the affected circuit court, because when the circuit court sits outside the main court, there are logistical issues that delays the 24-hour cycle. Indicator number 7, number of reports on judicial appointments and complaints produced, 3, all of them were achieved. Moving to program 3, judicial education and research. program consisted of a total of 3 indicators, and all of them were achieved, translated to 100% performance. The 2 sub-programs, South African Judicial Education Institute, achieved 100%, 2 out of 2 of its targets. Policy and research achieved 100%. The breakdown, indicator number 1, education and courses conducted, against the annual target of 70 courses to be conducted, 90 were conducted, overachieving with 20, and the reason is appointment of judicial educators as well as utilization of guest facilitators assisted the achievement of the target. The second, the M&E, Monitoring and Evaluation Framework for Judicial Education and Training, developed and implemented. Annual targets was that the framework should be approved in the financial year, and that was achieved. The last, the legal opinions on policy and research provided, 80% as an annual target, all of them were dealt with because we have systems in place and procedures to ensure that we fast-track the opinions as such. The summary of the financial performance is a comparison of 15-16, the maiden year, and the current year that we are reporting on, 16-17. I will summarize the details. The CFO can deal with those. You will note, honorable members, that in the previous financial year, 15-16, we had a final appropriation of 1.6 billion, and the actual expenditure against that was 1.655 against 16557. In the 16-17 financial year under review, we had an appropriation finally of 1.824 billion, and we have spent 1.786 billion, and we will deal with the underspending in this regard later. The breakdown of the budget against each program is indicated, and you will note that the second program number 2, which is where the core business of the department is where the main of the budget lies. The next slide zooms on the audit, the opinion of the auditor general as the audited the annual report of the department. The following are the actual focus areas for the 16-17 financial year annual audit, presented below with the 15-16, the maiden year comparative outcome audit. There are 3 focus areas: the annual financial statements, the annual performance report, and the compliance with legislation. In the 15-16, we had material statements, misstatements in our financial statements, and you'll note that in the 16-17, the year under review, we had no material misstatements in our financial statements. Therefore, we had a clean financial statements for the financial year under review. The second focus area, annual performance report, the material findings in the 15-16 on performance information in terms of usefulness and reliability were identified related to 2 programs, 2 and 3. In the year under review, there is an improvement. As already indicated in the financial statement, material findings were identified but limited only to quasi-judicial performance information and only in terms of reliability. The third focus area, compliance with legislation. In the maiden year, we had material non-compliance with key legislation identified, and in the year under review, 16-17, there were no material non-compliance identified. Therefore, we had a clean audit on compliance. In summary, both on annual financial statements and compliance, we had a clean audit from the Auditor General. The next slide is an indication and expression of the areas as a dashboard of how the Auditor General deal with the issues as they identify the audit findings in the department, and those are the areas that the department will be focusing on to ensure that we manage that as indicated. The OCJ risk areas emanating from the Auditor General's report as the audit are indicated, and the members will realize that the HR as well as information technology are still the areas that the department will have to work on, and we have plans in place to deal with those areas as already identified, and there are no regression both in the previous slide and in this current slide.
there are no identified regression in terms of those key focus areas. The Auditor General has indicated, as already indicated in the previous slide, the area where we were found in the performance information in relation to the three indicators in Program 2, which we are dealing with, and as already indicated, the three indicators and targets were actually achieved, except the warrants of release. The other two were achieved. It is just that there were misstatements in terms of materiality of the information that was found in our evidence. In terms of Program 1, it was not part of the audit. Program 2 and 3 were the areas of focus, and Program 3, there were no findings in there. We have also, as the Department and Improvement Plan, to respond to the audit findings, as we already indicated, to ensure the improvement of reported performance information. The OCG has adopted a plan which will ensure the following outcomes, which is, one, the improved control measures to ensure full alignment with the court administration processes, as well as the management of reported court performance information. Two, it will be institutionalization of the new audit methodology at the superior courts, so that the courts appreciate the areas where the Auditor General and internal audit focus on as the audit program continues for improvement. The third, for continuous verification of information through the combined assurance mechanism, where the internally we will put mechanism to ensure that we check each other in terms of the performance information. Four, to achieve the outcome of extended audit reviews on reported performance information by internal audit, especially in Program 2 and 3, which is where the risk is. And finally, OCJ ESCO, through the Audit Facilitation Committee, which is an internal committee, will continue the monitoring the implementation of the corrective measures to address the previous audit findings, and will ensure continuous improvement of the internal controls. The next slide, it was just an expression of the process that we will be following in terms of activity until the reporting of the and the tabling of the annual report. We have presented firstly the report to, after due processes, to the committee of judges of the heads of courts. The oversight committee is the committee of judges of the heads of courts on the 25th of August to inform them of the performance of the department in general. And then the submission to the DPME and Treasury, to the Ministry, and then the presentation of the annual report to the Portfolio Committee today. I would like to thank the Portfolio Committee on your continued oversight and ensuring that our department continue to improve to execute its mandate efficiently. I thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. Thank you.
I think your surname has a very deep meaning, and if it could be popularized, it could help unite humanity. Our common origins. Thank you very much for a very good presentation. Is there any other person from your side who is presenting? Other presentation for you?
No, I think I've covered, unless the committee wants the details on the budgets, but I gave an overall in terms of how we have managed on our budget expenditure, unless we can take questions, but I'm in your hands.
Well, thanks, Chair. It's just to commend the work of the Office of the Chief Justice and appreciate the chart flow which they have presented, which illustrate the performance in respect of the three domains. I don't know which page is this one, but that's very impressive. the three domains I'm referring to is the domain on leadership, on financial and performance management, and on governance. That flow chart is very impressive, more so when it locates the role of record keeping and record management system. Most of government departments and institutions fails to account and to ensure prudent financial management because of lack of access to records, a concern which the Office of the Auditor General has been expressing for so many years, and yet many departments fail to heed the advice that record management must always be in order. So I want to commend them about keeping good record management system in place. There's not much that we can say about the departments or the Office of the Chief Justice performance, other than to say when we talk about performance excellence, when you talk about a department which serves as a paragon of excellence and perfection, we talk about this kind of performance. So we want to commend them for their sterling and good work, and they must not disappoint us in the future. Thank you so much.
I hope you will convey that to your principals, whoever they are. That's well said. Honorable Hon.
Yes, thank you, Chair, and from my side also thank you for the presentation. I think, as the Honourable Matthias has said, that this young department is doing relatively well. I just would like, in terms of finances and AG findings, just feel obligated to raise the issue of irregular expenditure and wasteful expenditure, which, even if by the standards of other departments, Chair, it's relatively low. I think what we must say is that for a department of the status of the Office of the Chief Justice, they should really strive to get these figures to a zero. Because in terms of confidence and trust of the public, ultimately, I think it's important that if our judiciary is also tasked with dealing with financial irregularities in government departments, they themselves must be squeaky clean. That's by way of a general observation, Chair. Then in respect of ICT issues, this, like with virtually all other departments and entities, seem to be a recurring matter. And as we've said earlier to the Human Rights Commission, Chair, I think the same observations need to be repeated, and that is that I think in dealing also with the cyber security bill, we have come to learn about the huge risks there are when the cyber security environment of departments are not completely up to date. So even though we know that the systems that's in place are functioning, the issue of dealing with cyber security and preventing cyber attacks apart from physical theft of computer-related programs and hardware must be a priority for the Office of the Chief Justice going forward. We cannot have a situation where they expose themselves and the judiciary to cyber attacks. Then, Chair, in the annual report they made mention of what is called perennial challenges. And if we can maybe be assisted to understand that a bit better, because I think there's four of relevance identified there, namely placing cases on court rolls, utilization of court hours, implementation of pre-trial hearings, and case flow management and efficiency enhancement.
issues. And we, when we were briefed by the department, we've learned that yet again court hours have, throughout our courts, have dwindled. Previously we've had an understanding that the national and provincial efficiency enhancement committees were adding value, and we were sort of brought under the impression that that would result in a situation where this trend of dwindling court hours is reversed, but that's not happening. So if there's specific blockages or factors contributing to this, it would, I think, be helpful for us to firstly understand, and secondly also try and advise on some improvement measures that can assist to make these more efficient. And then there's, Chair, the last two issues is, the one, I think the first relates to this issue that there's, and I quote, a report, a serious resource and capacity challenges at superior courts, provincial centres and national offices. According to the annual report, we know that these statisticians have been appointed at the different superior courts, but maybe to give us an understanding of what these serious resource and capacity challenges in practical terms entail could also assist us in terms of the BRRR process. And then lastly, Chair, it's also reported that there's still some complications in the handing over process of services from the Department of Justice, and that's partly or wholly to blame for the fact that there's some suppliers who's not being paid within 30 days. So if we can be made to understand that issue better, I think that could also assist. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the report. One of the issues that we're still grappling with is the issue of how to look at the number of court cases that have been finalized and the reporting on that basis. Now, in your annual report, you refer to certain indicators on page 49, and you make it very clear that these indicators, whose performance was within the control of the judiciary, and the OCJ only provided administrative and technical support to the judiciary. Now, we understand that ongoing issue of discussion is to what degree should the judiciary account to Parliament for the number of cases finalized and the targets met. But it is interesting that you set out on that page 49 that in certain circumstances the courts have met their targets and others not. And I think, Chair, it's maybe helpful, and I understand your maybe reluctance to insert that page in your slides because of the accountability of the judiciary. I fully understand that, but it's very helpful to us, and I'm grateful that you've included that information in the annual report, because it does give an indication of most of the courts meeting their targets, and it also gives specific numbers of criminal cases, civil cases, land cases finalized and targets met. So maybe you can just unpack for us how we from Parliament should best engage with the judiciary on this issue, and if I'm correct in my reasoning that you didn't include that because of the issue of judiciary Parliament. But it's very helpful for us to see that, and I think it's good maybe for the public to see that, because it highlights that in most cases the targets of the courts were met, and bar one or two, and some, if you just take for example the civil cases that were finalized, there are improvements, 93,000 improvements. So I think that is helpful just from my side, but from our side, thank you as well for persevering under difficult conditions of budget and understanding exactly how the department fits in. Thank you, Chair.
Should also make a proposal as to how they should deal with it and not put them on the spot.
I would suggest you put it in your slides because it's in your annual report, and you've made a very clear caveat there that you said this is not under your control, this is under the control of the judiciary. but it is indicated in your annual report. And if you add those two sentences, these are the indicators whose performance was within the control of the judiciary. The OCJ only provided administrative and technical support to the judiciary. Then it's very clear that that reporting is done elsewhere and you're merely recording that. It's on page 49. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Sharp, Honorable Majake.
Thank you, Chairperson. I also wish to welcome the report from the Office of the Chief Justice. To thank you in particular, Mercy Joseph, for holding the fort. In terms of performance report, you've actually indicated that corporate service performance is 50%. You are qualified on it. Do you want to indicate as to what could be the problems? I would have thought management is part of corporate service, but I can see you've actually pulled out management and put it 100%. And then also, finance is 100%, but somehow when you indicate performance in terms of internal audit and risk management, it's 75%. And to some extent, you actually wonder how finance then becomes 100% when there is a lesser performance in that area. You said you will come back and indicate why the underspending. I think it's about 37 million. I'm sure if you can explain, just put us on board as to what the understanding is all about. And then in terms of identification of risk areas, do you think it's important for you to put under risk assessment ability to assess effectiveness of the courts in realization of the contribution? Because what you hear in terms of performance and targets, just the numbers. But are these numbers really giving meaning to the vision of the country, where we want to take South Africa to? And I don't know whether you, when you do your audit assessment and identification of risk, as to whether you think it's really important for you to look at ability to assess effectiveness of these court outcomes, so that we shouldn't just be like courts that are just handling cases, but the outcomes do not actually make meaning in terms of where we want to take South Africa to. You've indicated that you haven't actually, and this is one of the performance areas that are poor, you haven't managed to appoint the service provider for e-filing system. And when you look at it retrospectively, you can see that you have not been performing well in this area. Why aren't you appointing the service provider so that moving forward you can be in the position to have better performance in some of these areas? It's good to see that Sajay is performing very well. He's actually exceeded your performance. Did you say it's because you actually appointed more staff members for training? You'll actually indicate. But it's good to see that Sajay is actually performing very well. And then when are you going to do transfer of administration of magistracy to be in the position to comply to the 17th Amendment Act? You haven't mentioned anything about it. It would be good to get to know and understand when this is going to happen. You talked right at the end about your accountability to the Committee of Judges. Can you tell us more about this committee? I'm not really aware of it. And who sits in this committee? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Majake. Any other question or comment in the absence thereof, Mr. Sejosengwe, proceed.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, and Honorable Members for the questions. Maybe let me start with the easiest, the last one, Honorable Majake. The committee I referred to, the Judges Judicial Oversight Committee, is a committee of the heads of courts composed of the five judges president who were assigned when the process started, when the transfer of the Superior Court started from Justice to the OCJ, whom we were working with to make sure that the judiciary is also aware what its administration is doing in terms of the transfer, in terms of the running of the new department under the new vote. So it's chaired by the former Deputy President Mutiani, and it composed of judges President Leo, Makoba, Mlambo, and who else, Nati? Yes, it's a committee of judges president, and we keep them appraised of the administrative issues as they affect the efficiency of the courts in that respect. When the transferring of the magistracy will take place, the best answer I could give, honourable members, is that if one looks at the annual performance plan of the Department of Justice, where the function currently lies, they have planned that by the end of February they would have produced a framework that will include the policy on how the court administration bill that relates to the magistracy and the law courts bill will be dealt with. So we will be working with the Department of Justice on that based on those timelines, or if it comes earlier, obviously the better. But the transfer is based on that premise, which is the work that is driven from the DOJ through the minister. Yes, on such a, I think it is a recommendation. The non-appointment of the service provider for e-filing system and why we are not appointing. The honourable members will note that the first two quarters of this indicator and target were achieved, but we struggled with the second two quarters because when we went as planned into a tender process for the e-filing, then we did not have sufficient money. The bids were just above what we had, so we could not proceed with that. But the first phase of the e-filing has already taken place, which is the development of the business requirements that has happened in the first phase. So it is the second phase that we are dealing with now. We have received some funding from the IJS that we are utilizing for that purpose. I'll give the CFO to deal with the 37 million underspending. Maybe you could go to that slide. I think there's a slide that we realized that we anticipate in this question. Where the issues arose because of the compensation of employees. I think the honourable members are aware that National Treasury, after cabinet decision, imposed on all national departments budget ceiling on compensation of employees. Therefore, it meant we had to stay with them. And then we had to cap any further filling of those posts because it was going to affect the MTF figures. But I think the CFO can give much more detail on that. CFO.
Thank you, Honourable Chair FG. On the underspending of 37 million, I want to start with the slide that is currently projected. You will note that on the voted funds, we have a total underspending of 18.3 million. That is the third column, third last row. That was the underspending on voted funds. That is made up under program 1, 2 and 3, and that total amount of underspending was on compensation of employees. I need to stress the fact that the OCJ spent 100% of its operational budget. That is the goods and services and capital. The underspending only relates to compensation. Now, the reason for that underspending, Tebogo, if you can swap the slides there. Is, as the SG started to explain now, on the budget ceiling that was imposed on all national government departments in beginning of 2016-17. So what we have realized as the OCJ, if we utilize the full capacity of our compensation budget, in the 2016-17, we wouldn't have been able to afford the outer years of the compensation budget in terms of the budget ceiling. So once there is a cost of living increase, notch increases, social benefit increases, for instance, the contribution to GEMS has increased by 18%, which is not covered in that budget ceiling. If you look at the fifth bullet, the OCJ would have overspent in the current financial year by 13.6 million, in the next financial year 16.195 million, and then in the outer year 20.862 million. So the fact of the matter is that the budget ceilings for the three outer years prevented us from filling all the posts in the previous financial year. So in order for us not to overspend in the outer years, which would then be an unauthorized expenditure, we had to keep those posts vacant and have an underspending. Now, the second portion of the underspending was on the direct charge, which relates to judges' salaries. That was a 19.3 million, if I remember correctly. Now, that is basically just, as we explained previously in the committee, that direct charges are allocated by National Treasury based on our predictions on salary increases for judges, which are not known when the budget is done, but also in terms of the payment of gratuities to judges. We've explained in previous committees as well that judges are entitled to a gratuity every 15 years, after every 15 years of service, and then 20 years of service, but they can also choose to take it at a later date than when they become eligible for that. So the underspending mainly is as a result of fewer gratuities that were claimed by judges, as well as fewer appointments in acting judges, which carry the same salaries and benefits than a normal judge. So those were the two underspendings. So incidentally, both underspendings relate to compensation, but on operational budget, where we really have the crisis in the organization in terms of budget, we've spent 100% of the operational budget.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay.
Right. Honorable Chair, if you would allow me, I also just quickly want to refer to the question by Honorable Horn on the irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure. We really take note of the comment, and as a department serving the judiciary, it's very important to us that we strive to keep these figures either zero or as low as possible. You will, however, note in the annual financial statements, in irregular expenditure, we had one unfortunate incident where one of the officials authorized the payment of a supplier. The procurement process was 100% followed. Everything was done above board. But in terms of that delegation of the official, he only had a delegation to authorize 500,000 payment, and he authorized 528,000. So it's a very unfortunate incident, and that constitutes about 90% of the irregular expenditure, one incident. Then what is also important to note, the fruitless and wasteful expenditure is only 25,000 out of a budget of 1.9 billion. And the reason for that is that we have to report that when judges are on circuit court, we have to book accommodation based on the estimation by the National Prosecuting Authority on how long that circuit court case would happen. If the NPA tells us we must book the hotels or guest houses for the judge for 2 weeks, we book the hotels. If a case, however, is finalized within 1 week, then we pay penalties to the establishment for accommodation, for early cancellation fees. So 25,000 for the whole year is made up out of cancellation fees. So it's something out of our control, but it does constitute fruitless and wasteful expenditure, and we have to report it, unfortunately. But it's a very, very low amount out of a total budget of 1.8 billion.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will deal with the question related to Honorable Swart relating to page 49 of the annual report, where it deals with the judicial functions. And thanks for the comments, Honourable Member. I would like, on the question of how best to engage the judiciary on this, I would like to refer members to page 14 of the annual report. You will see on page 14 on the future plans of the department and paragraph 2 thereon, where we explain that the judiciary, after consulting the minister on reporting on judicial functions, had agreed and they have set in motion plans on and committees on how to deal with reporting on their side, and which we are supporting. And therefore, I think at the appropriate time, the Chief Justice will announce or pronounce himself on this issue and how that will take place, but I guess the committee, as it has done already twice, meeting with the heads, of course, can continue those engagements for that purpose. That was the reference I wanted to make to page 14, and we continue to support the judiciary to make sure that the performance of the courts are also supported. On what the specific blockages and capacity issues around the courts and the national office, I think on this issue the capability of the OCG as a new department is multifold. One is the human resource, which is the appointment of skills and competencies to do the work and other related to infrastructure, etc. But as the committee is aware that we have also a shared service arrangement with the Department of Justice, we are in continuous discussion with them in areas where we are lacking so that we can get the support from them. However, we have also submitted at the close of the financial year under review our macro-organizational structure to the Department of Public Service and Administration. We had concluded that process at the close of the financial year, and we continue to engage with them to ensure that our management structure at the macro level also is given attention. However, the general comment relating to resource capacity is funding of the different programs that we need to deliver on as a department. And like any other department, we are affected by the cuts that are happening, as well as trying to make within what we can deal with. We have even gone to the extent of, I approached the Chief Justice that I should speak to the judge's president to see whether there are areas where internally we can try to make savings to make sure that we fund priority areas due to the constraints that we are all under. On cybercrime and cybersecurity, the risk of cybercrime attack, Honorable Horn, we take the advice, and we have planned in our 17-18 financial year on also on attending to the information security framework, which will also make sure that we look at the space of the judiciary, the vulnerabilities, and attend to it in that sense. So that is in plan, and thank you very much for that. Is there any other thing that I didn't? I think other members of my team can zoom in on areas where maybe I may not have covered all the other areas. Not here, I don't know if there's any area I want to cover. Okay. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honourable Chair, there was one question by Honourable Horn about the late pay or the 30-day payment issue that wasn't adhered to as a result of the transfer of functions. The specific incident that they listed was one incident where the department failed to pay Stanek for fleet services rendered. The Stanek account was paid late. The Department of Justice was contracted by Stanek previously to deal with the vehicles of the departments as well as judges' vehicles. So when the contract came to an end during the financial year, the new contracting process between Stanek and the OCJ took a bit of time, but being a business, they continued to submit invoices. So we couldn't pay any invoices before the contract was negotiated and signed by the OCJ. So we had a late payment to Stanek in that regard, but that is sorted out. We are contracting with Stanek currently, and we are paying those invoices on time.
So in short, the judiciary is in capable hands, and that will give us a restful night. Okay. Is there anything you want to say?
Thanks, Chairperson. I think there was one item that we did not cover relating to Member Jackie's question on whether we also consider the vision of the country when we deal with risk around the courts. Just to indicate that in our planning process also in the administration, we take context of the National Development Plan, the MTSF, and Chapter 3 is quite relevant to us, and all other chapters of the MTSF that deals with the public service in general, with governance and administration. We do that. We do have the service delivery improvement plans in place, and though we are a new department, we have already started to implement some of the tools that we are dealing with to make sure that service delivery is given attention at the court level. And I think it is expressed also in the annual report.
maybe in future, if you can infuse that in the report, because it's just about the evaluation of the outcomes, so that we don't just talk about the numbers. And I do appreciate the fact that you actually look at the NDP and try to respond to the requirements of the NDP. But context of reporting should be such that it actually manages to address this. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Thank you, Chair.
Thank Mrs. Alison Tilde. She works so hard, she's everywhere. I even thought that she's an underground consultant. And the role that she plays on the continent. I don't know which is going to be the right forum to thank her for her national service, but I think it's very good to have people like yourself, Mrs. Tilley. We have one matter on the agenda, that is the invitation to attend a dinner with the South African Board of Sheriffs on the 17th October 2017. This is an invitation to the committee. I think when we respond, it would be good if we have an indication as to what would be available. Challenges and milestones in realizing its statutory objectives of promoting the esteem of the sheriff's profession, enhancing the efficiency and promoting high professional and ethical standards of all sheriffs in carrying out their roles in the civil justice value chain. And I think, therefore, this must be a matter that is in our interest as this Justice Committee as well. So we shouldn't take it as an add-on, but something that falls within the ambit of our work. Honorable
It is falling within the ambit of our work, Chairperson, but there we are invited for dinner. So maybe we should actually invite them to come and to report before us, because they, in a long time they have not come.
Why don't we start with you, first things first. They took the initiative to invite us. They want to reflect on this matter. We go and meet them socially, and then later we can invite them to come to us. Who would be available? Or because there's still some time, maybe we should indicate to the committee secretary, check your diary, and then indicate your availability. I think that would be good, but I would urge that we support them.
Chairperson, with due respect, may I ask whether we can be excused?
Yes, and we didn't want to gossip behind your back. You are well excused, and thank you very much for the good report, and keep up the good work.